from NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. They call them Friday night massacres. Well, this one oozed into Saturday, and the bizarre public back and forth between Attorney General Bill Barr and U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, Jeffrey Berman. Barr said Berman was stepping down. Berman said he wasn't. President Trump said it was all up to Barr. So what exactly is going on here? We will talk about the muddled optics of the moment, but we'll dig deeper too, because the real question is, why was Berman let go, and why now? So this hour on Point, the firing that's backfired. And we'll start today with Paula Reed. She joins us from Washington. She covers the Justice Department and the White House for CBS News. Paula, it's great to have you back.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
So shall we start on Friday night? it's just a couple of days ago, but so much has happened. And this press release that the Attorney General put out about nominating a new attorney for the Southern District of New York. Start us there. What happened?
So actually, let's start before Friday.
Okay.
Because in my reporting, as you try to suss out, right, is there something nefarious at play? Or is this just sort of a botched personnel move? I think it helps to go way back here. So several weeks back, Jay Clayton, the chairman of the Securities and Exchange Commission, expressed interest to the attorney general in becoming the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York. This is one of the most powerful, probably the most powerful U.S. attorney position in the country and one of the most powerful law enforcement jobs. He said he'd been wanting to move back up to New York. The attorney general thought this was a great idea. But we already had a U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York, and he has overseen many significant investigations. He has successfully prosecuted the president's former personal attorney, Michael Cohen. He has also been investigating the president's current personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani, for possible foreign lobbying violations. It's a very politically sensitive office. Now, he also declined to pursue additional inquiries into the president, possibly violating campaign finance violations. So doesn't necessarily have a record of being an ally or a straight adversary of the administration. But when the attorney general went to speak with him on Friday, we are told that he had a discussion with Berman and he offered him other positions, one in the Justice Department, heading up the Civil Rights Division, or even being the chairman of the SEC. Now, clearly the consensus stops there because
right.
The attorney general released a statement saying Berman had stepped down. The next morning, he said, no, I'm still coming to work. We saw him going into the office. He said, I have not stepped down. The attorney general has not really explained why he released that misleading statement. It appears then the attorney general went to the president, got him to fire Berman and sent him a letter to that effect. But then the president said, when he was asked on his way to his Tulsa rally, that he had nothing to do with this. But the president didn't stop there. He also said that he doesn't get involved in the Justice Department. And once again, we go back to this big question, right? Is this just incompetence or is this a conspiracy? The problem is the president suggested that he never gets involved in the Justice Department. And we just know that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
We know that's not true because the attorney general has said the president constantly weighing in on Twitter makes it impossible for him to do his job. Special counsel Robert Mueller found at least 11 instances where the president tried to get involved. So we know at least one of the two statements that the president made there are just not true, which makes it harder to believe the other statement, which is that the president had nothing to do with this.
Right.
Now, Clayton is also someone who has the guy who wanted this job. He is also someone who golfs occasionally with the president. So that's really where we're left right now. We have what looks like, okay, maybe you just want to swap one guy in for the other. Ooh, but the guy you're taking out is investigating your personal attorney. You can't keep your story straight. That's where we are right now. We don't have a lot of really clear answers. But one thing's pretty clear right now is that Mr. Clayton is unlikely to get this position because even the president's allies, like Senator Lindsey Graham
exactly.
on the Judiciary Committee, have come out and said, you know, we're not going to let this happen.
Yeah. So many questions, Paula.
So many questions.
let me throw this one at you. First of all, Jay Clayton was serving on the SEC and doing a fine job there. He has a good record as a corporate attorney. He's never served as a federal prosecutor, as far as I can tell. And I talked with some folks over the weekend who says that specifically regarding the Southern District of New York, the last time that someone was named U.S. attorney there who had never served as a federal prosecutor was 60 years ago. So this is a very particular district in which to say, hey, let's just put this guy over here. I mean, that's part of the strangeness of all this, isn't it?
It's incredibly strange. As you noted, he doesn't have experience in litigation. We have talked to multiple sources around him who all confirmed that he did want to make the move back up to New York. But as you noted, this specific job, this isn't just a U.S. attorney job. This is the U.S. attorney job. And for the attorney general or the president, whenever he got involved in this, to not even understand how the optics would play, it just makes it harder and harder to believe their story, particularly when they do this late at night on a Friday, try the Friday news dump, and they can't keep their story straight, even when you want to look at the set of facts that suggest, okay, maybe you just wanted to do this guy a favor, or maybe you're just, he suggested something that is a good idea. It makes it so hard to believe because of the way they've handled this.
There's another wrinkle here. In that first press release that the attorney general put out on Friday night, he says, on my recommendation, the president has appointed Craig Carpenito, currently the U.S. attorney for the District of New Jersey, to serve as acting U.S. attorney in the SDNY. Now, that's not going to happen anymore either, right? Because as of, I guess, Saturday, when all of this was shaking out, it was agreed that if when Berman finally said he was going to step down, that his deputy Audrey Strauss was actually instead going to take over in the interim. So what's going on there?
Exactly. Audrey Strauss will be stepping in the interim. That is typically the way these things are handled. She's a veteran prosecutor. She's really deep experience in white collar cases and mob cases. She's a moderate Republican. She is going to take that position. The U.S. attorney in New Jersey, he also released a statement supporting her. It appears that even if he was going to be involved, he took a few steps back and just did not want to get involved in this. And what's unfortunate is many of these folks are actually pretty good public servants who have solid track records in their current jobs or even in the private sector. And now they all have a little bit of stink on them.
Yeah. Well, Paula Reed, stand by for just a moment here, because I now want to bring into the conversation a couple of other legal experts. Stuart Gerson joins us from Washington. Stuart's a former assistant attorney general. He served as assistant AG under President George H.W. Bush and as acting attorney general of the United States during the early Clinton administration. And he joins us again from Washington. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And also with us from Washington as well is Jonathan Turley. He's professor of public interest law at George Washington University. Professor Turley, welcome to you.
Thank you.
So, Professor Turley, let me actually just start with you here. Is this just a ham-fisted handling of what would otherwise be kind of a pro forma transition in the Southern District of New York?
I think it could well be. The problem I've had with the coverage is that there was an immediate assumption that this was an effort to derail Trump-related investigations. It really sort of strained credulity why they would do that now. Barr has been attorney general for a long time. There's never been allegations that it interfered with this, with the Southern District of New York investigations. I think that what we've found from media reports, including people like Pete Williams at NBC, is he's saying that his sources indicate that this sort of fell out the way that Barr described, that there was a decision that Clayton wanted to go back to New York and was interested in this position, and they thought they would swap positions with Berman in order to keep Clayton in the administration. Now, that could well be the case. I think it's worth investigating. I'm glad Congress is going to look into it. But the assumption that this was to derail the Trump investigation does not appear to be panning out with media reports. When Barr was confirmed during his confirmation hearing, and I testified at that hearing, he said, notably, that he can't stop the president from replacing U.S. attorneys because they serve at the pleasure of the president. But what he would not allow to happen is the replacement of a U.S. attorney to interfere with an underlying investigation.
Mm. Stuart Gerson, would you like to respond to that?
Yes, I slightly disagree with my friend, the good professor. You have to go back a little bit farther to understand the context of this. Bill Barr has been interested in centralizing control over investigations and cases. What's going on with respect to the Southern District parallels what had been going on with the United States Attorney's Office for the District of Columbia. We know both from reporting and otherwise that there has been something less than cordiality between Barr and Berman going back at least a year. A lot of it has to do with the question of autonomy or autocracy. We know how Barr wants to run these things. We know that he displaced the U.S. attorney in the District of Columbia and replaced her with a person close to him and replaced him with a person also close to him. He tried to do the same thing in New York. Of course, it's somewhat ham-handed. Why does this happen when it happens? Well, we know that the president has been displeased with the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Southern District going back to the Cohen case. Mm. And certainly hasn't been happy with the Deutsche Bank case, with the Giuliani investigation. Emerson once described circumstantial evidence as opening the icebox and seeing the fish in the milk. We have plenty of fish in the milk here. Whether it's to quash an investigation, to satisfy the president, or just satisfy Barr's felt and expressed need to control formerly independent United States attorneys' offices, we have a situation that at least is unusual.
Okay, so we're going to come back to all this in just a second. But, Paula, we've got about a minute to go before the break here. I'm just wondering, based on your reporting and your sources, your thoughts about what Stuart Gerson is saying about Bill Barr's desire to really centralize, I guess for lack of a better term, things inside the Justice Department in his office, really.
Look, I mean, this isn't the first time the Southern District of New York and Maine Justice, the headquarters under any administration, have butted heads over independence. We jokingly refer to it as the Sovereign District of New York. So that is possible. But again, we have all these facts, and it is not clear if this was the Attorney General trying to serve his own political interests. Doesn't help that he gave contradictory statements, him and the president. But there's also a lot of evidence that suggests that this might have just been incompetence and a failure to understand how this would play out in the public sphere.
Well, we are talking about exactly what happened over the weekend regarding the Southern District of New York and, more importantly, Bill Barr and the Department of Justice. We'll have a lot more when we come back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We are talking about the remarkable back and forth between Attorney General Bill Barr and now the former U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York that happened this weekend, and really trying to understand more deeply what this means about Bill Barr and the running of the Department of Justice. Now, as you heard in the previous segment, there was a lot of back and forth, including the Attorney General saying that the president wanted to remove Jeffrey Berman as the U.S. attorney in New York. But then on Saturday morning, as he set off for Tulsa, Oklahoma, President Trump was asked why he fired Jeffrey Berman, as the Attorney General said he had. And this is what the president said.
Why did you fire Jeffrey Berman, Mr. President? Why did you fire him?
That's all up to the Attorney General. Attorney General Barr is working on that. That's his department, not my department. But we have a very capable Attorney General, so that's really up to him. I'm not involved.
Paula Reed, let me ask you just quickly. First of all, just specifically speaking, does the president, doesn't he have to be involved here if the U.S. attorney is being fired? Because that can only come from the president. Is that right?
Yes, he has to be. He's the one with the authority, as the Attorney General has noted, as Jonathan Turley has noted. He has the power to fire U.S. attorneys. But again, the president says, no, I leave the whole Justice Department up to the Attorney General. That, again, as I said, that's just not true. William Barr has said that is not true. William Barr has said the president's prolific tweets on specific cases, particularly those related to his current and former allies like Mike Flynn or Roger Stone, make it, in Barr's words, impossible for him to do his job.
Yeah.
The special counsel found 11 instances where the president tried to possibly obstruct justice by interfering with cases or investigations. So this argument that the president just doesn't get involved in the Justice Department, it just doesn't pass the smell test, which is what makes it even harder to believe his other statement, which is that he had nothing to do with this decision. Again, if he and Barr could have maybe gotten their story straight, not done this late at night on a Friday, maybe gotten more buy-in from Berman, it wouldn't have raised quite as much suspicion. Now, there's always going to be some questions because of the nature of this office and who they were trying to put in there, not having the right experience. But the way they've handled it, it's just really raised more and more questions about Barr's role in this administration. Is he just trying to be the nation's top law enforcement officer, or is he enabling the president's sometimes worst instincts?
It is very perplexing, I have to say, because on the June 20th letter that Attorney General Barr wrote to Jeffrey Berman, he says, quote, because you have declared that you have no intention of resigning. Because you have declared that you have no intention of resigning, I have asked the president to remove you as of today, and he has done so. So it sounds like even in that sentence that the impetus from this is coming from Barr.
Yes, and the Justice Department has said that this was Barr's decision, that Barr is the one who heard that Clayton wanted this job. Barr thought it was a good idea. The Justice Department also insists that this had nothing to do with any ongoing investigations, particularly that into Rudy Giuliani. I spoke to Rudy Giuliani. What was interesting is he said he had nothing to do with this. He said he's never discussed this case, his ongoing case, with the Attorney General. He also said that he has such a good relationship with the current U.S. Attorney Berman, he was the one who recommended him for the job. So we don't have any evidence that there was some sort of conspiracy to oust him to help Rudy Giuliani or the president's allies. The problem is the president and the attorney general can't keep their story straight on what's going on here.
Well, let's just listen to a little bit of what Jeffrey Berman said as he showed up for work on Saturday morning and reporters tried to get him to comment on Bill Barr's statement that he was stepping down. And as of Saturday morning, this is what Jeffrey Berman had to say.
I have nothing to add to that this morning. I'm just here to do my job.
By the afternoon, of course, though, he had indeed stepped down. Now, Professor Turley and Stuart Gerson, let me just turn back to both of you for a second. And Professor Turley, let me start with you. You mentioned that some of the media analysis of this moment strains credulity, but respectfully, I would say that it's the Attorney General's behavior here that strains credulity a little bit. Because on the 19th, as you well know, in that first public statement, he said, I thank Jeffrey Berman, who is stepping down. He said that in writing, presumably knowing at that point when this statement was released that Berman had in fact not actually agreed to do so, because the next day he said, we were in ongoing discussions. So why? Can you help me understand why Bill Barr? You know him quite well. Why would he put something like that in writing, even knowing that at that time it wasn't specifically true?
Well, I haven't talked to Attorney General Barr about this, but I think that the problem with a lot of the coverage, as usual, is it's all on this hair trigger, that the minute something like this happens, people assume that there is a conspiracy with Barr to stop investigations. And I think that was fueled by Berman's own statement that he issued, that he was going to guarantee that these investigations are not interfered with. There's been no evidence at all that Barr has ever interfered with the Southern District of New York. And Barr immediately said that is not the case. It would not be the case. And I have to tell you, I do know Bill Barr very well. And it's not a relationship that necessarily makes me that popular in academia. But I have never met a more direct and truthful man than Bill Barr in Washington, D.C. You can disagree with his policies, and I have criticized him in columns since he's been attorney general. But he is very honest and very direct. My suspicion is that he thought that Berman was stepping down. Usually when an attorney general calls you and says, you need to be out by July, we would like to swap positions between you and Clayton, Our understanding is that Berman said, I'm really not interested in going to Washington or in that position. But from Barr's perspective, the assumption is that he believed that the message was conveyed, that he's going to step down in early July. That's usually the way this works when an attorney general calls you and says that we want to switch this position. Now, was that ham-handed? Absolutely. Should that have been done on a Friday night? No. But as you know, administrations, including the Obama administrations, routinely make these decisions on Friday mm-hmm. nights. I can't stand it. I think it's a terrible practice. But it did not begin with this decision, and it's been the consistent approach of prior presidents to issue these types of changes on Friday night.
Agreed. The Friday night news dump is anathema. I think it's a terrible thing. It's bad for democracy, absolutely. But I guess what I'm trying to understand, and Stuart Gerson, let me turn back to you on this. I'm trying not to get too bogged down in the back and forth, but I think it's revealing. We have to understand how this happened because it tells us about how Attorney General Bill Barr sees his position and his oversight of the Justice Department. So, I mean, you worked as Assistant Attorney General. Is this how it's supposed to work? I mean, as Professor Turley said, that you sort of reach some kind of understanding or perceived understanding, that you go ahead and put a press release out, and it's all usually smooth sailing after that.
Well, when it comes to perceptions, I can't say what Bill Barr's perception was. We know what Jeffrey Berman's perception was, and that was that he was being moved out against his will, and that he, Berman, was concerned about the integrity of investigations going forward. He said so. So we don't have to read minds in order to come to that conclusion. We know objectively that Bill Barr wants to exert a great deal of control over at least two key United States attorney's offices, the District of Columbia and the Southern District of New York. We know that there are investigations important to the administration that are occurring in both places. We know that Barr has said that they all have to go through him. So we can at least say that this is involved with a desire by the attorney general to centralize control over these organizations that he has viewed in the past as being too independent. I think those things are objectively demonstrable. The fact that the termination of Berman was done in a ham-handed way doesn't contradict anything. It just says that the termination was done in a ham-handed way. The public ultimately benefits from that because rather than getting the unrelated U.S. attorney from New Jersey to come in, we have the first assistant under the Vacancy Act, Audrey Strauss, who's a pro. I think the public can take great confidence in her tenure, which probably will last for the rest of this president's term. That's a good thing. She's taken on organized crime. She's taken on tough cases, and she's won them. She is a prosecutor.
Jonathan Turley, one more thing about sort of how all this was handled, and then we'll dig more deeply into issues in the Justice Department. But you and many others have said repeatedly that Bill Barr is a top-notch legal thinker. You just said he's as honest and direct. He obviously has years and years and years of experience in government at the highest level levels in the Department of Justice. I have a hard time buying that he wouldn't know that putting something out like this, forget the Friday night part, but putting something out like this when they hadn't actually reached an agreement with Berman, that it didn't have the strong possibility of blowing up in his face. I thought that he'd be smarter than that in handling media. And if he's not, why not? I mean, that's the part that also strains credulity here.
No, that is a valid point. And also, I agree with much of what Stuart has discussed about the concentration of authority between main justice and U.S. attorney's offices. That didn't start with Barr, but certainly he follows a model completely unrelated to investigations of main justice remaining the sort of central directive point of these U.S. attorney's offices. But to your point, I totally understand, and I can probably rid you of doubt. No, he's not smart about the media. It is an aspect of Bill Barr that comes up often. When he issued that statement on Friday night, I'm 100% certain he believed it was true. What we understand about the conversation is that Berman simply said he wants to think about these other positions. When people I've talked to at Justice have said that there was not any doubt that he was going to leave. The Attorney General just said, you need to leave. And the question was, would he swap the position with Clayton, take over the civil division? And Berman said, I want to think about this some more. So I think from Barr's perspective, that was still open, but not the question of his stepping down, because it was never open. The minute Berman issued that statement, I stated on Twitter, well, he'll be fired now, because, you know, that's how this works. That is, if you decline that type of call from the Attorney General, the next step would be termination. But to answer your question again, no, he tends to have the sort of peril of the righteous. When he believes he's correct, when he believes he has the facts right, he doesn't often think of how it plays. He doesn't think about the optics. It's not the result, as some people would suggest, of a sort of deep conspiracy or fundamental dishonesty. Mm. I think people who've interviewed Bill Barr honestly will tell you that he's one of the most interesting interviews because he doesn't spin. He tends to tell you exactly what he thinks.
So let's put optics aside there for a moment. What about, do you have any concerns or not, about the fact that this, as Paula was explaining earlier, might have all been triggered by Jay Clayton's desire to leave the SEC and want to move back to New York. So even though he had not served as a federal litigator at any time, that the administration, Bill Barr, the president, whomever, said, yes, let's put him in as the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York, a district that is extremely high profile and simultaneously handling these sensitive cases that are related to the president.
Yeah, this is where I agree with Stuart. I don't think Clayton is a good choice for the U.S. attorney's office or a good fit. I also am curious as to why, if Berman was otherwise qualified, they were going to take the step of moving someone from New Jersey as the interim U.S. attorney. Those are the types of questions that I think Congress should legitimately demand answers on from the Justice Department and Bill Barr personally. But it sort of goes back to his confirmation hearing. The question is, what hill you die on as an attorney general? And what the Attorney General said in his confirmation hearing was very, very clear. And I think he might have understood this could be a problem in the future. He said, I can't stop the president from changing U.S. attorneys, but I can refuse any change that tries to influence an underlying investigation. Mm. And I believe that really captures Bill Barr's philosophy of how he views the role of the Attorney General.
So, Paula Reed, it's quite mind-bending to think that a game of golf might have actually started all of this.
Is it that mind-bending? I think it fits perfectly.
I suppose I'm still I'm still not yet past the point of being surprised by this. I should be, but I'm not. It seems to me, though, that the fact is that this is all turning out wrong for everyone, Clayton included, right? Because I want to come back to something that you said a little bit earlier, that, for example, Senator Lindsey Graham is saying that they're going to honor the tradition of blue slipping. So it sounds like Clayton's prospects at the Southern District of New York are pretty much deep sixed now.
Yes. And like I said, he now has a little bit of stink on him. I mean, Audrey Strauss should get a real comfortable chair for that office because she's probably going to be here for the rest of the administration. But we have to go back to this issue of Bill Barr. Now, I know Jonathan is friendly with Barr, respects him a lot, but there's a reason that the public does not completely trust Bill Barr. I mean, in an interview with my colleague Margaret Brennan a short time ago, I mean, he tried to argue that pepper balls were not chemical, denying that they use pepper spray when in fact, that's just not true. We also had the special counsel, Robert Mueller, come out and send a letter saying that he believed that the attorney general and his memo to Congress did not capture the full context and nature, the substance of Robert Mueller's work. We also know that this attorney general has appointed 6 U.S. attorneys to look into the president's political adversaries or specific political matters that are of significant importance to the president, even if those matters have already been investigated by Congress and the internal watchdog at the Justice Department. There are a lot of folks who are wondering if Bill Barr is, again, enabling a lot of the president's political preferences. And that's why in a situation like this, that on the one hand can just look like, yeah, you rolled out the, you kind of botched a swap here that you were trying to do. That's why there's so many layers of skepticism on this, because of the other decisions that the attorney general has made, other things that he has said that have led folks to really question what his role is in this administration.
Professor Trilley, we've got about a minute before we have to take another break. Do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, I have to disagree with my friend Paula on a number of those things. First of all, those Russian investigations that he ordered have in fact turned over new information. There's this mantra that they've already been investigated. My understanding is that the Durham investigation is going to produce extremely troubling findings. We're hearing that all over the Hill. We're hearing that from the Justice Department. He has extended it. But also, if you just look at the recently released documents, that was new information, and it's troubling. My view of this is very simple. I want transparency. I'd love them all to be investigated and for these reports to be made public. I'm a little skeptical when the Democrats who have been engaging in continuing investigations going back years are objecting to these investigations. I say a pox upon all their houses and let these investigations go forward.
Well, Jonathan Turley, Paula Reed, and Stuart Gerson, stand by for just a moment. We'll be right back with more. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about Attorney General Bill Barr and the major kerfuffle that happened over the weekend with the removal of the now former U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York. I'm joined today by Jonathan Turley. He's a professor of public interest law at George Washington University. Paula Reed is with us. She covers the Department of Justice and the White House for CBS News. And Stuart Gerson joins us as well. He served as Assistant Attorney General under President George H.W. Bush and as Acting Attorney General of the United States during the early Clinton administration. Currently, he's a member of the law firm Epstein, Becker, and Green. And I just want to play for you all a moment from yesterday where Jerry Nadler, the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, Democrat from New York, was on CNN's State of the Union. And host Jake Tapper asked Congressman Nadler if he agreed with colleagues such as Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren, who have said that Attorney General Barr should be impeached. And here is how Nadler responded.
No, I don't think calls for his impeachment are premature any more than calls for the president's impeachment were premature. But they are a waste of time at this point because we know that we have a corrupt Republican majority in the Senate, which will not consider an impeachment no matter what the evidence and no matter what the facts.
So, Stuart Gerson, let me turn to you. Chairman Nadler there, Congressman Nadler is pointing to November more than anything. But do you think, I mean, at what point in time, we've discussed a litany of concerns here regarding Attorney General Barr's leadership at the Department of Justice. But at what point in time does it become too much that we must actually fully question how Barr has led the DOJ?
Well, I think we can answer that question without needlessly involving ourselves in impeachment discussions that aren't going to go anyplace. Congressman Nadler is correct about that. Look, Bill Barr is right a whole bunch of times. He runs the department in a positive way in a lot of areas. Where he's really wrong is in his view of the unitary executive as somehow being superior to the other branches of government. He enables President Trump. It's a symbiotic relationship. The key to the whole thing is not Bill Barr. It's Donald Trump. The impeachment hearing that matters will occur in November when the people get to vote. Justice and the administration had a terrible week last week in the Supreme Court, on the streets of Washington, and in the Southern District of New York. These things are adding up. We have a very divided country. We have an administration that has gone out of its way to divide the country. MAGA ought to mean to this president, make America grow apart. That's the source of the problem. Bill Barr is a symptom of that. You look at the head of an organization, it's the president. So Congressman Nadler is correct. There are things related to the Justice Department and the rule of law that are fairly criticized. I agree with Professor Turley that these things ought to be investigated. I don't think that Congress has done the job that it ought to do in protecting its appropriations power, for example, against intrusions by the president. The judiciary needs protection. The intervention by the attorney general in the sentencings of Stone and Flynn, and now trying to supersede Judge Emmett Sullivan in the District of Columbia, I think are very problematic. Those things ought to be looked at, but the reckoning is going to come in November.
Well, so point taken about the president being the president of the United States, but I still just I don't think I want to step fully back from, as you say, how Attorney General Barr is enabling a lot of this. I mean, we have a situation here where, I mean, as I think we pointed out earlier, that the politicization of the Department of Justice has become so complete that I'll give another example. You'll all recall when federal prosecutors resigned or withdrew from criminal cases regarding some of the president's former aides because or just after the attorney general intervened himself to drop charges or to seek lighter punishment. I mean, we have gotten to the point, Stuart Gerson, where literally it seems like almost it's impossible to see anything coming out of the Justice Department as anything but politicized. Isn't that a long-lasting damage to the DOJ?
Well, look, I was around during the Saturday Night Massacre, which didn't help DOJ either. It's a resilient organization. Am I concerned right now? Obviously I am. Career people with a great deal of skill, judgment, and history are being ignored, and they're being ignored for political reasons. But these things are being exposed. And I'm counting on the judiciary. I'm counting on the Supreme Court and the D.C. Circuit. The president's batting average and DOJ's batting average in immigration cases is terrible. They've lost other major cases. There are a few coming up that the Supreme Court has yet to decide, where I imagine the administration will get some wins. We'll hear about that. But these problems, these interventions, these bad decisions are being exposed to the public. Jonathan Turley and I agree that there ought to be hearings. There is a legislative aim to such things, and Congress would be within its prerogatives to hold those things. As I say, Jonathan and I agree about that. We'd like to see it go. We'd like to see it go forward. This information is getting to the public thanks to reporting like the Wall Street Journal, which has been quite good about this, the Post and the Times as well, op-eds, my checks and balances friends and the Lincoln Project are out there. This stuff is seeing the light of day. As I say, its reckoning is going to occur several months down the road. If enough people think it's important. It harkens back to Benjamin Franklin's answer to the woman who asked him what the Constitutional Convention did. And he said, we've given you a republic. If you can keep it, it's now up to the American public to decide whether they want to keep it.
Professor Turley, I just want to give you a chance to respond to that.
Stuart and I agree on the unitary executive theory. In fact, when I testified at Barr's confirmation, I started out by saying he and I have disagreed for 30 years on executive power, and I told the Senate he will be a strong advocate of executive power, executive privilege. That has been his touchstone for 30 years. That hasn't changed. And this is where I have a quibble with Stuart's description. I don't think that Barr is an enabler. I think that he honestly feels that there is a center to the executive branch, that is the president, that he has certain prerogatives. He also believes that the attorney general has certain responsibilities to protect investigations from political interference. And I think historically we're going to look back, and I think that Barr is going to look better than he does today. I think that rather than being an enabler, he has tried to protect the Department of Justice as an institution from the worst impacts of the Trump White House. He has protected these investigations. It's true, he intervened in Flynn, but that was after an investigation found very troubling problems with the Flynn case. And as a criminal defense attorney, I'm astonished that my friends are ignoring what was released recently about the Flynn investigation. So I happen to agree with the position of the Department of Justice on its change in the sentencing recommendation.
You believe Bill Barr will come out looking better in the eyes of history?
I believe he will, because I think that what people don't see is what Bill Barr does to the protection of the Department of Justice. Now, at the end of the day, I think the way Bill views these issues is what is being decided as to whether it is a presidential prerogative or his prerogative. And he tries the best he can to protect the Department of Justice. And I think he largely has succeeded. Where he has failed, I think, is these types of ham-handed moments like we just saw. It does interfere with the integrity of the Justice Department. And yes, these answers must be given. And one of the biggest criticisms I have with Bill Barr is that he didn't make it clear from the outset that this was not going to affect any investigations. But from his perspective, I think that he believes that he already said that in his confirmation and that he would never do that. And he doesn't see the need for him to affirm that. Well, there is a need, because Stuart is right. Yeah. This is a problem of perception.
So Paula Reid, I mean, I hear Jonathan Turley say that he believes Bill Barr is going to come out looking better in the eyes of history. But at the same time, also that some of the actions that the attorney general has taken do damage the integrity of the Justice Department. I'm going to give you the last word here, Paula, because of the deep reporting you've done on this. I mean, just your final thoughts.
Barr hasn't just interfered in the Flynn case. He also got involved in the Roger Stone case. Mm-hmm. He also appointed two U.S. attorneys to look at whatever it is that Rudy Giuliani brought back from the Ukraine in his suitcases. The investigations that I pointed to, those six U.S. attorneys, that's not just reviewing the Russia investigation. That's also whatever Giuliani brought back from Ukraine. That's also looking at the Flynn case, other D.C. cases. In addition, he's also appointed a U.S. attorney to look into the unmasking. These are all issues that the president has showed a personal interest in. And while he's allocating all these resources, all of these assurances to make sure that the president, the president's allies, the president's personal attorneys, constitutional rights are protected, at the same time, the Trump Justice Department has opened one federal investigation into constitutional policing practices, when the previous three administrations opened 69. So there are some clear questions about whether the attorney general is using his gifts. He's very smart. He's very capable to truly protect the constitutional rights of all people, or if the scale has sort of been tipped to really focus on the president and protecting him and his political interests. And again, I go back, even his longtime friend, special counsel Robert Mueller, one of the only times we ever heard from Robert Mueller, aside from his testimony, was when he pointed to the attorney general and said, "You did not fairly characterize my findings." And of course, Barr's characterization favored the president.
Paula Reid is a White House and Justice Department correspondent for CBS News. Jonathan Turley is a professor of public interest law at George Washington University. And Stuart Gerson is former assistant attorney general under President George H.W. Bush and currently a member of the law firm Epstein, Becker & Green. Thank you to you all for joining us today to talk about the Justice Department. In the last several minutes of the show, I want to turn to Anthony Brooks, who's On Point's 2020 correspondent and senior political reporter for WBUR. And Anthony, you've been listening along to this discussion about Bill Barr. And of course, all of this is coming as President Trump is trying to restart his campaign, his presidential campaign. He had that rally on Saturday in Tulsa. So what have you been seeing here, Anthony?
Well, you know, that rally in Tulsa, let's start there. I mean, it was supposed to be the restart of the Trump campaign, and it came with a lot of expectations, promises of more than a million people who wanted to attend. And instead, the BOK Center in Tulsa was about two-thirds full. So President Trump was able to deliver by now a familiar campaign speech in that we've heard a lot of these themes going back to 2016. He also talked about his record of appointing conservative judges, cutting taxes and deregulations. He bashed the fake news. But Meghna, I thought what was most striking about the event was what he didn't talk about, what he didn't say. You know, he sort of made fun of the coronavirus, calling it the Kung Flu. He didn't acknowledge the pain of millions of Americans, including the pain of more than 100,000 deaths, the pain of those families. He didn't acknowledge the economic pain of a recession or a depression. He didn't acknowledge the current movement for racial justice and protests around police brutality. So it just seemed out of step with the moment. And it's unclear if that message of sort of racial grievance that he brought is, you know, in tune with the moment and is going to allow him to capitalize on any effort to improve his reelection prospects. That's what I took away from Saturday, I think.
Yeah. And there were some things that he did say. I mean, you mentioned him using that basically the racist term for the coronavirus or the pandemic. He also said he asked for testing to be slowed down as well. I mean, so there were, I hear you when you say that all the things that he didn't talk about in terms of what's gripping the nation at the moment. But when he did talk about those things, I'm not sure how people heard it, depending on what their view is of the president.
Yeah. And in terms of that one fact about him calling for testing to be slowed down, we should hasten to add that the White House quickly sort of fought.
Anthony, you with us?
Still here.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, we should hasten to add that the White House quickly added about that comment calling for testing to be slowed down that he was joking. So we should just make that point. But you know, at worst, it was, at the best you can say about it, it was a terrible joke in a moment of real national crisis.
Yeah, or maybe it wasn't a joke. I'm not sure how we can be absolutely positive about that anymore. Now,
fair enough.
We've got about a couple more minutes here, Anthony. You know, in the midst of all this, there is a Democratic presumptive nominee as well in former Vice President Joe Biden. What's the news coming out of his campaign?
Well, you know, he continues to look like he's in a pretty good position. It's not clear if that's because of anything that he's doing in particular or if it's because of what the president isn't doing. There were new fundraising numbers. Joe Biden outraised President Trump in the month of May for the first time. He raised something like $7 million more than Donald Trump in the month of May. But Trump's reelection committee maintains a big advantage still in overall cash, $265 million cash on hand. Things are looking up for Biden if you look at the national polls and the battleground state polls. But it has to be said, he hasn't been out a lot yet. Mm-hmm. So as the summer heats up, it'll be really interesting to watch how he fares when it's more of a direct contest with Donald Trump. Right now, it feels like it's Donald Trump against Donald Trump. It'll be interesting to watch when it's Donald Trump against Joe Biden.
We got a minute to go here, Anthony. I mean, eventually, the Biden camp will have to announce his running mate. Do you have any intel on that?
No intel. I mean, I was struck by Senator Amy Klobuchar sort of taking herself out of the running and saying that Joe Biden would really do best if he focuses on a woman of color. So that is causing, that seems where Biden is heading in this moment. It raises interesting questions about the viability of Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts, who is also considered among the front runners being considered. So we will see. That's going to be a big announcement in early August, we expect.
Well, Anthony Brooks is On Point's 2020 correspondent and senior political reporter at WBUR. Anthony, thank you as always.
My pleasure, Meghna.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.